on, Tom. Using my radio voice. You're listening to POF 107.8.
You're listening to Crazy FM.
Welcome to Podcast on Fire 110. Seems like only yesterday it was 100, so we are producing like crazy here. So my name is Kenneth Bose, I'm your host for this evening, and with me is my trusted new companion since round about episode 100. So Tom KW, say hi.
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Crazy FM. And Hong Kong Dave.
Hi everyone.
Right on. Everything all right, guys? How you doing? Are you feeling good? We're producing. You're part of like the continual efforts on the Podcast on Fire network. We got shows every week, bi-weekly shows in terms of the special shows, the rest of the shows on the network. Feeling good? Feeling comfortable?
Yeah,
absolutely shitting them out at the moment. With the show, so.
And that's how I envision it.
Good, right? Yeah.
After episode 100, I just wish we can shit out more episodes. And it happened! I'm so happy. My heart is so warm. And shit is flying out. So, wonderful, Tom. Absolutely wonderful. Where the shit is flying out is at podcastonfire.com. The Podcast on Fire network, home of multiple shows, 6 in total at this time. And you're listening to The Anchor Show. We have a message forum where you can interact with us, podcastonfire.com/forum. There's an extensive members-only archive there for registered members. That is free registration, containing exclusive movie reviews, outtakes, in general, silliness. There might be some silliness from this episode in a members-only archive. You never know. We haven't scripted the silliness we'll see what happens. But when we do plan larger exclusive features that aren't part of the main shows, we'll actually be putting those up as bonus episodes from now on. And we did that recently with our review of Magikarp, part of Vampire Season, which was a good fun. 45 minutes of extra stuff, but you can't access that if you are only tuning in to us on iTunes or Stitcher. That is only on the website. So go over to podcastonfire.com and check out the bonus episodes section. We are on Facebook. We have a Facebook discussion group. You can just search Podcast on Fire and you'll get to us. And at the same time, you'll see that we'll have a page as well. And that has an address that is easy to remember as well. facebook.com/POF network. We are also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And I do my writing on sogoodreviews.com and my video reviewing on sleazykvideo.com. Getting together a busy mix nowadays, but I do what's cool. And to me, what's cool is focusing on Taiwanese movies, either presented by IFD or Filmark, or just Taiwanese movies from that era that me and King Hu have discussed from the 70s and 80s. I want to highlight those movies. Absolutely adore them. And there will be category 3 movies still. Obviously bad or great movies, classic or not so classic movies. And also I have a huge, huge boner for Hong Kong horror and Taiwanese horror from a certain era, you know, with the stuff that Shaw Brothers did, Boxer's Omen, Killer Snakes, and all those movies. I go where the cool is, and therefore there will be sort of random, cool Hong Kong and Taiwanese movies reviewed as well that aren't really part of that genre that I just described. You know, for instance, tonight's feature movie, I will eventually re-review on my site as a big review because I think it's a cool movie. And that gets me going, gets my adrenaline flowing and my creativity flowing. So all of that on sogoodreviews.com and sleazykvideo.com. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. As I mentioned, we are on iTunes. You can subscribe to Podcast on Fire, the entire network on iTunes. And we're also on Stitcher, stitcher.com, an app you can download free to your computer or your smartphone like the iPhone, and listen to us on the go, stream us on the go. Just search Podcast on Fire Network and you can add all of the shows individually, including the latest one created as of this time, the Director's Series. And as you well know now, listeners, Hong Kong Dave has a Facebook page other than his own that he maintains. So tell us about that, David.
Yeah, quite a few updates this week. Started getting through some shows for March already, which is fairly in advance for this Hong Kong scene. So that's nice to see. I've done quite a bit this week, and it's all up there. So if people want to go and check it out, it's just search Hong Kong Good Guide on Facebook, and that'll take you straight there.
When are you going to Hong Kong, by the way, to check out some of the gigs yourself? When's that happening?
That's the end of May, for a couple of weeks.
Right on. Have you eyed any gigs, or they're all planned, sort of a short date, these kind of gigs?
Yeah, they're usually going any more than a month or two in advance, the local scene. I mean, so if there's sort of, visiting international bands, it might be, a bit more notice than that usually, but
yeah, of course.
The local stuff is, month or two tops usually.
Is it fun to, walk the streets and sort of encounter these outdoor street concerts or street performers? Do you like doing that?
Yeah, there is a regular outdoor concert series right by the Hong Kong Arts Centre in Wan Chai. It's roughly every month or so. They just have, there's a few, they set up proper equipment outside, a few different bands, a real kind of mix. And it's literally right backs onto the traffic. So, you've got the bands playing, you've got the taxis and the buses going through the background. So that's right, quite fun.
It's the Hong Kong street level, the Hong Kong vibe. I really like the sound of that. And maybe Johnny Toe shooting a movie in some office behind you. Maybe, you never know. I don't know. Maybe in the Milky Way offices, it's just a glance away or two. So you never know.
Well, it was the street show that I saw there last time, where I bumped into Herman Yao, so that was quite fun.
Right on. And Tom, you are you have done, yes. I mean, you sounded very like, uh-oh.
What do you want?
Wow, what are you doing on vcinemashow.com? Explain to us, what are you doing over there?
I'm working on a review at the moment. Still not up yet, everyone just bear with it. Keep looking for the updates on there. It's a bit like pulling teeth at the moment with this one review, but it's gonna be coming. Yeah, I'm trying to kind of stay passionate about it, and haven't watched a lot of new stuff at the moment. But there should be an Enter the Phoenix review coming quite soon,
right on,
which was interesting to write. So that, yeah, very soon. Just keep your eyes peeled for that one.
And speaking of V-Cinema, you listeners should tune into their episode number 38, located at vcinemashow.com. Because that episode marked their 2-year anniversary as a podcast. So huge congratulations to the guys, Coffin John, Josh, the newly added host, Dr. Stanglick, and past co-host now, sort of guest star, Rufus, because he heads his own podcast at cineawesome.com. Kudos, guys, for staying energetic and being full of drive and energy. And that's, in all seriousness, a big inspiration for me personally in whatever I do, writing or researching for the podcast or what have you. And it's also a great, fun, relaxed show to listen to, even if I, for instance, am not personally interested in the subject or haven't heard of a movie. In the case of episode 38, they talk of this Japanese movie called The Family Game, which I haven't heard of, and it was great fun listening to the review, and I certainly got an urge to see the movie. If that will happen, I don't know, but they proved with episode 38 they are still on top of the game, and again, congratulations. And on the anniversary subject, V-Cinema have announced an anniversary contest, and this will be linked in our show, but obviously you can go to vcinemashow.com, and the contest post will be the first one on the blog for a while. And what this contest is, and what you need to do to win a whole lot of goodies, there's a great chance to win because there's a whole lot of goodies. What you need to do is write a haiku about V-Cinema. And if you don't know what a haiku is, like like I, they explain it to you. A little poem, if you will. A five.
Is that like how smart you are? Haiku.
Tom will not win.
I'll go now.
But you're going to write a haiku about V Cinema, essentially, and bonus points, if you will, as Josh alluded to, is if you include his name and rape in the haiku.
Okay.
Yeah. And goodies included, and I'm only mentioning one of them because there's a whole bunch of them, so go to thecinemashow.com. But some goodies includes several copies of Beat Takeshi's Outrage are up for grabs that Tom spoke of during Podcast on Fire episode 104. But again, there's a whole lot of stuff to win, so go to thecinemashow.com and check out that post, and your chance of winning is really, really great. And the contest ends around about February 8th, I think. All details are available on the website, and this show that we're recording now will be up on February the 4th. So there's you will be able to enter that competition. And congratulations again, and hope to see and hear for the 3rd year anniversary. So congratulations, guys, and thecinemashow.com.
Yep. Congrats, guys.
Okay, moving on to network updates. And last few weeks of activity on the Podcast on Fire network have included welcoming another co-host that will be on every now and again, not every week, but every now and again. As I said during the show, I liked Phil Gillen of EasternPhilFans.co.uk too much to not ask him to be part of the team without any commitment, of course, not a weekly commitment. Like you guys, you don't have a weekly commitment as a demand, but you have been kind enough to be there anyway. So, by auditioning, so to say, this was part of the audition tape series. I'm not in between the lines saying that there's a contract written in blood here that you need to co-host every week. Even though it might seem like that way, because Hong Kong Dave and Tom KW are on here, but I really enjoy doing this every week. I really enjoy having a weekly interaction. So what we've been doing, again, for the last few weeks is putting up the Resurrection of Vampire season. That was episode 109 of Podcast on Fire, which featured me and Stu talking about Mr. Vampire in 1992 for one half, and me, David, and Tom going in depth on vampire versus vampire during the second half. But again, of note, attached to that episode was our first bonus episode that featured the 45-minute review of Magic Cop by us three. And you should keep an eye up on the website, because we will probably continue this format. I really dig the idea, not that it was my idea, but obviously V Cinema are doing bonus episodes as well. But I dig the idea of, and I have always of extending the POF experience either to members only or to the bonus episode format. And it's easy to do, very easy to do. And so keep an eye out on members only as well as the website for bonus episodes. But again, not on iTunes or Stitcher, only on podcastonfire.com. I might as well ask you guys that, because you were listeners for the longest of time. Was that an idea you dug, that there was more, you know, extensive conversation not available in the main shows, exclusive stuff? People like DVD extras and stuff like that. So have you been an extras guy before, and do you like the Podcast on Fire extras when you were listening, Dave?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I like to check out. I mean, sometimes you got stuff, or you know, you'll have stuff that doesn't necessarily sort of fit in to the main sort of, you know, main thrust of the broadcast, but you know, it's still interesting material.
Yeah.
So you know, it works really well as a separate piece.
Yeah, and we didn't exclude Magikarp because it didn't fit in Vampire Season. Obviously, it does, but it seemed like a good movie to, so to say, lure listeners in. You know, here's Magikarp, that movie that is very beloved, and you can listen to it as a bonus episode on the website. So it's as easy as access as it ever was, you know, maybe even easier, because not all listeners go to the forum and register on the forum. So I dug it. What about you, Tom? What did you think of the past members only stuff? Did you enjoy getting short nuggets or big nuggets of extra stuff?
Yeah, it was always fun to have a little behind the scenes there. I first get into it, and when I first got into it, obviously I crammed a lot of the earlier episodes in kind of like in a week or something, so it was nice to have stuff on the forums for each episode that kind of extended the episodes out, and you feel like because you're part of the community, you get, you know, a bit of extra something to enhance the episodes a bit.
Cool.
Which was always cool, yeah.
And when, don't know yet when we'll be doing another bonus episode, maybe for the upcoming Japan on Fire series or next Vampire season. Well, I haven't said that. I said that we'll definitely be doing a bonus episode for the next Vampire season, which will be the coverage of Ultimate Vampire, Spooky Encounters 2, and Crazy Safari. And I vote for Crazy Safari to be the bonus episode. just because, again, it's a well-loved movie and a great fun movie. But as I said, we have Japan on Fire coming up, and it's sort of in the immediate pipeline. I'm recording it on Saturday, the day you hear this episode. I will start Japan on Fire 6, and it's a return to anime and live action, and I'll explain why. We will be covering part of most of the career of filmmaker Mamoru Oshii, and if you haven't heard of him, he's the director of Ghost in the Shell, the Polish-Japanese production Avalon, which was live action, and if I'm pronouncing this correctly, I think it's pronounced Pat Labor, the big franchise, the Mecha franchise, that has both been feature movies and original video animations and mangas and TV series. That was Mamoru Oshii behind those movies and series. I always dug him. I think it's a cool director, and I love Ghost in the Shell. It's a challenging movie. Avalon, a challenging movie. More than experience, I think. I'm not sure I got it, but I absolutely dug the experience. And, who comes up with the fact that you are shooting, a sort of Matrix-esque movie, virtual reality movie, in Polish? It's such a great idea and a great visual right to, even though Avalon mostly looks, poop brown. Its design is poop brown.
Just carry on with the shit theme of the show.
Yeah. Crazy FM! do you guys remember seeing screens from Avalon or even watching Avalon?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
I've seen the trailer. I'm a big fan of Oshii, so I've seen the trailer. I still haven't yet seen it, though. But yeah, it looks like a very interesting film, so.
But I'm actually excluding you guys from the first episode. We will be doing. Yeah. I'm the Hitler of the Podcast on Fire Network. All of a sudden, you don't get to go, and you don't get to go. But who will be on alongside with me is a special guest from V Cinema, Coffin John.
I don't need anybody else then, Ken.
No, he needs to be there to make sure I don't mess up. That series, Japan on Fire, has always been mostly about venturing into new territory and experiencing new things. That was the original idea, and it still rings true for this coverage. I've seen part of Oshii's filmography, not all, so it's going to be fun discovering, in particular, the stuff from the last 5 or 10 years that I haven't seen. Skycrawlers, for instance, I haven't seen. And I will possibly have some author or journalist who has written about Oshii on for a future episode in that series that may be 3 or 4 episodes long. And you alluded to this a little bit, but have you any experience with, for instance, his very most known movie, Ghost in the Shell? Did you ever catch that, David?
Yeah, a long time ago. But I can't remember too much about it.
It was a very big movie at the time. I mean, manga appeared out properly in the UK. And there was a cinema run, at least in America, and really a movie that crossed over to non-anime fans to an extent in America, and influential and all that. We will talk of this on the show, but I'll say it right now. Never, ever, ever venture into Ghost in the Shell 2.0. The Redux version. It looks like shit.
Shit. Absolute shit.
They tweaked the look and added new CD, and it just looks literally like shit too, and I don't know what Oshii was on.
Pointless.
Yeah.
Pointless. It's not even like he's gone back and kind of made it look better. It just replaced whole scenes of animation with strange, like, PlayStation 1 looking, you know, computer graphics. Very odd.
Yeah.
Odd reasoning behind it. I don't understand fully why he went back and did it.
No. It's a shame. Apparently it replaced the part of, or maybe the entire dialogue track on the Japanese track, which I'm not sure what was the reason for it. For instance, yeah, the actual main hacker character,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is yeah, now, I think it was a male voice on Japanese track, now it's a woman. Or
female
vice versa.
Now, yeah. Apparently that's originally what he planned.
Yeah, which might work, you know what I mean? But it's I won't judge the the language track, but it's based on screens of Ghost in the Shell 2.0. I'm thinking, like, why? It didn't look bad then. It certainly got a whole lot worse all of a sudden. Just pointless.
And I sat through again, so I can tell you it's not worth it.
Right, okay.
At all.
Yeah, we won't be covering 2.0. It's the 1995 original on when we do cover it. Moving on, the Director Series 3 on the Seven Curse is in the bag since a few weeks. We actually recorded it and it's done and edited. But since I want to vary it up, you know, in terms of the other shows on the network, I don't want, you know, the Director Series to be on bi-weekly. I want to vary it up if I can. We are thinking of debuting the Director Series 3 on the Seven Curse at the end of this month, while the mid-February show, special show, will be the mention Japan on Fire. That's the plan now, anyway. And finally, this week, this past Wednesday, we listened to this on Saturday, I was really excited to put up our commentary on Fire for Nobody's Hero. I mean, we really tried to pimp as much as we could because it deserves it. It's such a rare movie. It finally turned up in full on YouTube, which was a blessing for those who doesn't own the VHS version that we watched. And it's out there in full, and now the commentary as well. And I hope everybody who was interested in the movie found an interest via chat about it, found the time to watch the movie on full and in full. And also like to listen to our audio commentary if you like listen to audio commentaries at all. I don't know, but I hope we get a chance to tune in. I thought it turned out really well, and I re-listened to it a few times because I do it during editing for editing purposes, but I like to go back once the show is published just to hear it with some distance, and it's good mix of info and fun and a whole lot of serious stuff and real reactions to the actions on screen without us sitting there reacting to the movie for 20 minutes, you know, in one stretch. You know, yeah, we do try to provide the info, but it's impossible not to react to some of the violent scenes in Nobody's Hero.
Yeah, the thing is, they're very different in tone to our Undefeatable commentary.
Yeah.
A bit more of a somber tone, because it deserves it. It's a serious film. I think that's the only way you kind of approach it.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge to approach a serious film. That's what I've always wanted to do, and we'll probably do as a challenge, a commentary on Stanley Kwan's Rouge, which I'm sure you can have fun with, but it's a very somber, atmospheric ghost romance. Anita Moy and Leslie Cheung. And I adore the film, and I think that'll be a challenge. It's not like, you know, we're gonna sit there and be very serious, but it, like you said, Tom, like a movie like Undefeatable, you know, triggers you know, your funny bone too.
Definitely. It's hard to watch Rouge as well without having the kind of, you know, emotional kind of background with both the stars sadly being passed away.
Yeah, and they actually, you know, it's not a spoiler this because it happens early in the film, but the characters do make a suicide pact, and unfortunately Leslie Cheung committed suicide. So it's not like you can draw a straight line to the movie. It's just you think of it, and it's an emotional movie. It's hard not to think of it, but the most positive thing about a movie like that than any movie with someone who's passed away, you know, Bruce Lee, you know, you know that they left so much work behind them, such impact behind them, and that's always the positive aspect of it, which will make it fun, though, to look back on a fantastic performance as fun or serious, because both those actors, Leslie and Anita, were capable of anything.
Yeah.
So, we'll probably do Rouge at some point. But that's essentially a network update. Check them out. We'll be linking to and relevant, making relevant links based on this discussion we've had in network updates. But now we're moving on to maybe a brief last movies watch, because we are changing formats a little bit and doing a feature review, a roundtable review of a movie we've all seen. So last movies watch will be, for me anyway, eventually a shorter chat. But I'll open up the floor, despite for you guys to talk of essentially what Asian movie you want and for how long you'd like. So Hong Kong Dave. Last movies watched.
Yeah, my last movie watched was I Love Hong Kong. I just caught up with this 2011 Chinese New Year film directed by Eric Tang.
Can I just ask you, haven't they done another I Love Hong Kong 2012? Yeah. So it's a series already.
Yeah, it's yeah. I just caught up with the last year's in time for the 2012 installment, which I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
You know, directed by Eric Tang, stars him, funnily enough, along with Tony Leung Kar Fai, Sandra Ng, Anita Yuen, Stanley Fung, and a whole host of TVB stars. You know, like most Chinese New Year films, you know, plots aren't really the thing, but such as it is, it revolves around the proposed redevelopment of a public housing estate. And it bears, you know,
commentary. You know, that's commentary, that's local commentary already there, you know, yeah. Redeveloping.
Yeah. I mean, and it bears a considerable comparison with the 2010 Chinese New Year film 72 Tenants of Prosperity, also directed by, directed by and starring Eric Tang.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's a familiar theme, you know, not just in these two films, but, you know, in a whole load of others. It's a Chinese New Year film. It's, you know, there are a lot of familiar, you know, plot devices and, you know, characters.
But better back then. They were more fun back then when they had more stars. So how does a Lunar New Year movie feel now compared to, like, late 80s when you had, you know, Eighth Happiness and everybody being in one of those movies and the original What's Well Ends Well?
Yeah, I mean, I still recognize, you know, they've still got some of the old faces in it, but a lot of the, you know, TV stars don't really mean a whole lot to me. You know, I might recognize the odd face or two, but so aside from the big names, I don't recognize a whole load of people. You know, I do have a soft spot for Chinese New Year films, and there's a good deal of fun to be had here, despite some extreme mugging going on. And some you know, some product placement that would even embarrass Adam Sandler, but The mark of a good Chinese New Year film is that, you know, a parade of stars being, you know, silly, and this fits the bill. You know, it's not a classic of its kind or anything, but, you know, I laughed out loud, you know, more than enough to consider it worth a rewatch. So,
okay,
you know,
that sounds exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
There, because I have no urge to watch any Lunar New Year films nowadays. I have a soft spot for them back then. Again, Eighth Happiness is fantastic fun, and Chow Yun Fat on fire in that movie. Out of control. And Yak Chung, and loads of Raymond Wong, loads of stars in those, and directed by Johnny Toe. And you're not seeing that anymore, you know, Johnny Toe going the Lunar New Year route.
No. It's all a lot of them now, it's, you know, a few, you know, same familiar faces. I mean, last year, I think, Louis Koo was even in competing Lunar New Year films. He was in, like, two or three at the same time. Crazy.
Well, it's not something to dislike, though. No, I mean, up for fun. Criticism they may be, but they are done with a purpose for a holiday.
Yeah.
And you know, I may say that I disliked them back then, but I have no real desire and no really valid reason to criticize them, these kind of movies, you know. I've heard, though, that some of them are way too long, though. It seems like they squeeze, you know, not 90 minutes, but rather like 2 hour movies, some of these Lunar New Year movies, which sounds like a trek. How long is this?
It's a little over 100.
which is long in my head.
Yeah.
Already, you know. It was good fun. That's how he summarised it.
Yeah, good fun. Yeah, just yeah. You know, that's you know, if these movies, you know, reach that kind of a level, that's you know, that's a pass. That's a hit. You know.
Do you try to watch any Lunar New Year movies at during the Lunar New Year? Like people watch Christmas movies at Christmas, and the Halloween movies at Halloween. Do you at all plan for this? What just happened?
Yeah, I've watched a few of the classics recently. I mean. Original All's Well Ends Well's, you know, that's a good fun. The Hong Kong, I think, early 90s film It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
You know, Penny Lung Cafe in that one as well. It's, you know, that's a real good good bit of silliness. So.
All right,
dude.
Good stuff.
Anything else?
No, just that. Just
all right. All right. So what about you, Tom? What happened since we last spoke in terms of last movies watched and all that?
Well, I can't remember what show it was on that we spoke about this, but I kind of had the feeling to go and watch it. So I rewatched Bullets Over Summer right. from 1999, directed by Wilson Yee.
A commentary or something. No, it was for doing the director series because
yeah.
we talked of Lo Meng.
Yeah. It plays a crook in this one. I rewatched it because I couldn't remember much about it aside from a couple of the key scenes. I remember very much about it, and it's decent. I think Branson's performance is just electrifying as usual. It's just crazy good, like in it, and it's got some nice set pieces, like the beginning takedown in the corner shop, if you remember that, and the scene when he's on the criminal's roof, like we spoke about in. Speaking about it before, and he's trying to keep quiet, and really good kind of tension filled scenes, and I like the fact it's more of a relationship kind of melodrama than an average cop movie. But I think
it certainly starts like a big action movie, action movie, and there's a state, you know, it's Stakeout, maybe it's Hong Kong Stakeout, but it really isn't, as you say.
Go on, Dave.
Yeah, I remember when this came out, I wrote a review of it at the time. I said it felt like that the, you know, the filmmaker's main interest was in the sort of relationship aspect, and the sort of you know, the action scenes were sort of, you know, were there, you know, to, you know, just to sort of kind of bookend the film, but the real kind of heart of it was the relationships.
I think it was Wilson Yip's favorite director, you know, Ip Man director, Donnie Yen's favorite director, one of his early movies.
Yeah.
I think it was his way of just, you know, playing with us a little bit and being quirky and just being, I don't know, consciously or not, but I didn't mind that it's violent aspects at the beginning, but then calm down as soon as the relationship that starts is the relationship between Francis and the senile old grandmother played by Helena Law, whose apartment they actually take over for the stakeout. That I didn't mind that transition because I'm used to it, and I don't think it was any added stuff for anyone to be for an action audience to be pleased. I just think it was Wilson Yip's freedom. I can do this. I can do this as well.
Yeah, it's definitely like a kind of freewheeling film. Like you know, you don't know what's coming next, and it's definitely like soap opera kind of esque. You know, you've got these kind of slightly forced, you know, dramatic tangents at time that I can see a lot of people being put off by them because it is kind of random at times, and the film's tone switches quite often, and you mean stuff kind of just, it does kind of happen for drama's sake with the stuff like I think Francis Ng's got a disease or something like that he finds out about or something that's wrong with him, and it's kind of not touched upon after that, but I think it starts off well, and you are enjoying the drama between the characters, and then I think it just falls apart near the back end.
The ending, it was the one thing that I wasn't on board
conclusion.
With.
Very strange conclusion. It didn't seem just like Wilson was trying to make things a bit more artier than they should have been. Then he really kind of maybe should have just, you know, not a wham-bam finale, but kind of, you know, more satisfying finale, because it seems very, very strange. But it's an interesting film. I just don't think Francis can save the film just on his charisma alone, but, you know, he has a good go at it.
Their scenes together, though, Francis's and Helena's scenes, they are definitely the core of the film, where Wilson excels as a director. Their subtle interaction is great. It's definitely kind of a mother-son relationship in a way, although she's not aware of that because, again, she's very, very senile in the film. But it seems like he connects to her, you know. I think he lies down, not with her, but beside her in one scene, just, you know.
Yeah, she's on a chair, I think, yeah, exactly, and falling asleep, and he's kind of just... Yeah, it's quite sweet, their relationship is, and... Yeah, I think it's weird because there's many things about it that I really liked, but there's a lot of things about it I didn't as well, so it's a strange film. It's very strange. I still don't know how... I haven't made my mind 100% whether I like the film or not, because there's a lot about it. I think it's definitely a film that warrants a few rewatches to kind of... Mm-hmm. Soak it all in, because there's a lot of stuff going on in it, but yeah. I don't know how you guys think, but for me, I think I'd prefer Wilson Yip's stuff of the last decade, just because I suppose I'm more of an action fan and I like that stuff as opposed to his earlier stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's kind of somewhat disjointed. It's not sort of really sort of kind of smooth, you know, from beginning to end, but I mean, you know, Helene Law and, you know, Francis and both just really fantastic with drama and with, you know, with the comedy too. So, you know, that their scenes together just, you know, really good. I mean, you know, they're just really strong, sort of multi-skilled performers. So it's...
Yeah, I think that drives the film, but I agree on the criticisms, though. But I do prefer Wilson Yip of this period because I discovered him, his movies from this period, and things improved drastically in Juliet in Love.
Yeah, that's another really good one. Yeah.
That has a similar thing where the ending is seemingly cryptic, but if you really look at it and invest time in the film, it's a challenging ending that does make sense when you finish it. And the movie is really also... The strength of the movie is the interplay between characters in a restricted environment. In this case, Francis and Sandra... taking care of Simon Yam's baby. Simon Yam plays a tri-boss, and they are taking care of that baby. It has some comedy, but it's their interaction is really good, and less said is better in that movie. But it's a damn challenging movie, and I know the ending has probably confused a whole lot of people. I've seen the movie quite a few times and been on board with the ending each and every time, and I love the subtle challenge. And I wish that maybe Wilson has left this behind deliberately. He doesn't want this anymore, but I wish I could see some flashes of this, because personally I'm not really interested in the action direction he's taking with Dragon Tiger Gate and Ip Man 1 and 2. I'm not judging the movies at all, I'm just not interested really. I like this quirkier side a whole lot. I mean, there's a latter movie called The Mummy Aged 19, which I really don't.
Yeah.
Starring the voice from Shine. But it was Shine, such a good, fun, free-for-all, quirky movie as well. I dug it. And having said that, I did like SBL. I thought that was a really good movie. It had some solid drama in it, great action, and it's a rough, gritty thriller. So I'm not dismissing him as an action director at all. It's just my heart doesn't race when thinking about the prospect of watching the likes of Ip Man and Dragon Tiger Gate. Eventually I will, but they are not priorities for me. And it seems like his latest movie, that Magic to Win, was a bit of a turd, according to reviews. So
I'm looking at the poster now, and it looks like they've got ice cream cones on their hands. I don't fully understand what's going on.
It's kind of a,
it sounds like a fun, quirky idea, but who knows?
It's kind of a redo of the old sort of Happy Ghost sort of series.
Is Raymond in it as well?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Okay.
So I think,
my God, I hope it's not having sex with the young starlets in that movie.
Oh, no, that'd be a bit much.
Like Insanity, you know?
I think for that, at least, he's just kind of like, you know, a director for hire kind of thing.
Right, perhaps so.
You can see it both ways. I think with his newer stuff, it's more commercial, but I think it's stronger and more better put together. His older stuff is less, it's more interesting, but it's kind of a bit of a mixed bag. So I suppose you could look at it both ways. Yeah. I think he's definitely two phases in a career, and both of them are quite interesting, but their own different ways.
Yeah, I do dig him. I mean, I watched that movie, was it called 2002 or 2001? or released in.
That was released in 2001.
Yeah, and I dug that kind of a modern day, kind of vampire busting, ghost busting movie with Nick Chia and Stephen Fong. Good fun.
Came out in the UK, I think. Well,
I don't remember. Sure. I only have the Hong Kong DVD of 2002.
Yeah, I think it came out on the. Well, yeah, I think it's been Bio Zombie as well. I only saw recently as well.
Bio Zombie,
which was exactly the same. I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, but it's definitely got some stuff in it that's really, really good. So yeah, he's an interesting director, and his older stuff. I definitely need to see more of it. Which I want to see.
Odd story about that. Well, not that odd actually, but an unusual sort of side note to that film. One of the guys that plays. There's a sushi bar in that film. The guy that plays, is the one with glasses who's after the girl and that. One of my mates in Hong Kong lives virtually next door to him. It's really weird.
Emotion Chung.
Yeah, that's what it is. I knew he had a very wonderful English name.
Awesome name.
And it's sort of, does mostly kind of, stage plays and things now.
Right. But, he's actually in The Chinese Box from Jeremy Irons' Gong Li movie. I think he either commits suicide in front of a crowd or cuts himself in front of a crowd in the other stages of in The Chinese Box. Which is one thing I remember, because also you had Hong Kong cast. I mean, Michael Hui was in The Chinese Box and had a really scary scene where he, the fury comes out in Michael Hui, which was great. And not a bad movie. I think it's, who's the director of Chinese Box? It's Wayne Wang, the director of Smoke. And so after a little bit of research, yeah, it is Wayne Wang, who directed The Chinese Box from 1997. Gong Li, Jeremy Irons, and a few Hong Kong recognizable faces for all of us. Not a bad movie, if I remember correctly. Maggie Cheung, apparently, in a role. I don't remember if her role was large or not. But, how did we get to The Chinese Box from... by the way, we talked about Emotion Cheung and Bio Zombie. There we go. He was in Anton's Story 2 as well. I remember Emotion Cheung. You were saying he's mostly a stage actor.
Yeah, just it's kind of serious kind of stage plays and things now.
Right on. Okay, Tom. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Right.
That's me doing.
Okay, I don't have any review as such. I just mentioned a few things I've been watching for research purposes and just for. For a second, having fun and watching movies in a relaxed way and not being forced to write about them. So, I went the ninja route again, but not the IT ninja route. I went the Golden Globus ninja action route. So I watched Enter the Ninja, the great Golden Globus ninja action movie with Franco Nero and Sho Kosuji. I haven't seen it before. And I didn't expect it to be so deliberately goofy. It's actually designed as a comedy, really. I mean, one bad guy has a German accent and has a hook for his arm's been cut off, so he has a hook there instead. Not intimidating whatsoever, but it's really good fun. He's a little fucking fat, funny bad guy. He's not the main bad guy, he's just good fun. And then I rewatched Revenge of the Ninja, which all of a sudden now Sho Kosuji got his own story vehicle. He only had a supporting part in Enter the Ninja. It's really fast-paced fun, genuinely features some of the best ninja action put on film. The end fight is great, great fun. But then again, that claim that it's genuinely features some of the best ninja action put on film, I haven't seen... the likes of Ninja Mission, which is Sweden's proudest cinematic treasure to the world. So I haven't seen that yet. It's should they really go out and watch Ninja Mission one of these days? As a non-Asian aside, I squeezed in a viewing of Bobcat Goldthwait's Stay, aka Sleeping Dogs Lie. Have you ever heard of that, guys?
I saw this on your Facebook. Yeah, what's that about?
it's about this this man and a woman, they are engaged, and they are talking about revealing their innermost secrets. You know, I want to know everything about you. So she tells him about the time when she was in college and she gave her dog a blowjob.
Oh, man.
And that derails the relationship, and the family really gets derailed as well. And it is actually a very funny but also serious movie about family and how drama like this can really upset the family. And also an underlying theme of the movie is that lies aren't necessarily a bad thing. And it's by Bobcat Goldthwait, the guy from Police Academy who plays Zed. And he's a solid director. He did World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams. Do you guys see that?
I've seen it in my local videos, so I'll have to pick it up.
Very dark movie. Robin Williams' son commits suicide by, what's it called, autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah.
He dies during that. And instead of... Robin Williams is like a failed writer, so he rewrites his son's suicide note to make it appear that his son was, because his son was an asshole. So, but he rewrites it to make it seem like the son had feelings and was deep and was misunderstood, and that takes off. You know, all of a sudden everybody starts worshipping the son, and now he's dead, and Robin Williams gets to be a writer essentially. Really, it's not, you know, it's very dark, it's very black, and now he's made this movie called God Bless America about this guy who finds out he has terminal cancer and goes out shooting people who doesn't deserve to live.
Sounds good.
And, you know, who knew? Who knew Bobcat had these train of thoughts in him? So there's a Red Band trailer, i.e. a very foul-mouthed and violent trailer for God Bless America. Go check that out. It's out on DVD, Blu-ray, and demand later this spring, I think. And then I watched some obscure Hong Kong action movie called Wheels on Wheels. I guess you guys heard of it.
That's shit.
Yeah, it's, you know, some indie movie with starring some dead
beasts
that no one
knows. Please tell us about it and your thoughts. I
don't have much thoughts. I just watched it, and it was a bit overlong, but good fun. Good fun. And good violent fun as well. And, you know... If you didn't fall in love with Lola Fauna in Arm of God, you will during this movie.
Great.
And I had a chance to see it with the dub that everyone prefers and with the soundtrack that everyone prefers, the Japanese English dubbed soundtrack. And I'm talking their music choices. It's apparently a lot better. And I like them. So, I mean, I thought it was a kick-ass soundtrack. And it made sense to watch it in English, I think. Seeing as it's set in Spain, it seems like a fair amount of the cast was attempting English anyway. Better than hearing all the Spanish cast speak Cantonese.
And up for Samo's spectacular perm as well, and that's...
Yes.
It's really special.
But yeah, it was good fun. I don't have much else to say about it. It's out of the Three Brothers movies, I think I like this one the least. I think Project A is my favorite out of the Three Brothers movies, then Dragons Forever and this. But, you know, it's not like...
I 100% agree with you. Yeah.
It is a bit overlong, I think. They could have trimmed this about 10 minutes. It's well over 100 minutes long, but still good fun. And
How would you rate the action in comparison to the rest of Jackie's stuff or even Samo's stuff?
I mean... I don't know, to be honest, Tom. I mean, I liked it. I really, really liked it. And it's hard. I like that it's hard-hitting rather than balletic prop action a la Jackie Chan, which I love. But I love Samo's powerful, hard-hitting action
Jackie
that hurts, you know, genuinely hurts. I like that a whole lot more from a... that gives me kicks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no mistaking that they are taking hits and they are, pushing themselves to the limit in terms of that for our pleasure.
Yeah, Jackie always looks better when he's choreographed by Samo as well.
I agree.
Without a doubt.
So that's why I like Dragons Forever a whole lot. I think when thinking about Dragons Forever, I like it a whole lot more because of Yuen Biu's role, because he's absolutely batshit insane.
Quirky, yeah. Have you seen the deleted scenes, Ken?
Yeah, I have. The psychiatrist scenes are absolutely great. So I think for Yuen Biu's, the Yuen Biu performances in those three movies, you know, hands down Dragons Forever. He's wonderful in Wheels on Meals, and I don't remember much of him in Project A, so he didn't stand out as such there, but all good fun. And finally I watched the Holy Trilogy, if you will.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now Lucky Stars films, Ken.
yeah, Will, they haven't been priorities because I have a feeling I know what they are kind of, you know, about. It's the horny Lucky Stars gang, and I've seen the odd movie where the Lucky Stars gangs are in, but it's not one of the Jackie Chan Lucky Stars movies. I think I saw, like, They Came to Rob Hong Kong, which has Stanley Fung and Eric Tsang and all that, and it's... You know, I think I know what I'm getting in those movies. I have no hurry to watch those. These three, I didn't exactly know what to expect, and they aren't like every other Hong Kong movie of the 80s. They're kind of individual efforts and stand out because of it. But in terms of rewatching, this probably won't be rewatched as much as Project A and Dragons Forever, in all honesty.
Yeah. The Lucky Stars, they're nowhere near as good as the trilogy you just mentioned, but they're good fun in their own right. They're definitely worth seeing. And I just realised I fucked up. I confused 2000 AD, directed by Gun Chan, with Wilson Yip's 2002. 2000 AD was the film that was released on Hong Kong Legends, just as a side note.
You're fired.
I'm sorry.
All righty. Hope you don't fuck up during the next segment. Then you're really fine.
I'll try.
Better make it a good review. And after the break, we will therefore go to the feature subject of this podcast, and it's the review of Asian Connection. And in the break, I might just delete this because I'm hoping to cut together some English dialogue from Danny Lee as break.
Yeah.
A suitable break, just to lead us into the break and lead us out of the break. So, take it away, Danny Lee.
No problem. My pleasure, sir.
So welcome back, and it's time for the moment where we kind of change the format, not come up with a new format or anything, because this is how podcasts do it, but we've chosen for the moment anyway to feature a weekly review by whatever crew is on the episode, you know, so something that we all watched, and it's a way of developing, make Ken watch a film so it affects all of us, I guess. And to start us off, I picked a movie for the trio that gathered up tonight, and it's the 1995 Danny Lee actioner Asian Connection. And by the way, at the end of the review, David will pick a movie for us to review next episode, and thus, hopefully, we'll be tackling a variety of movies. I encourage, you know, to pick Korean and Japanese and Thai and what have you. Just, you know, versatility and variety is a good thing. And I want to, like, show the guys, you know, the likes of Ghoul, Sex Squad, the hardcore porn hoppy vampire movie, just
please,
because you know, if you want to, I'll pick that, but it's not like I'm gonna pick the most extreme shit and you'll sit there and like it, but I might. Anyway, Asian Connection was directed by David Lam, the director of Women's Prison, First Shot, and Hong Kong Gigolo, and co-directed by Yoon Duck, whose only directing credit is this movie, normally a action director, and is this film's action director as well. Stars Danny Lee and Michael Chow as two Hong Kong cops that messes up a undercover drug deal in Hong Kong that leaves undercover cop Rocky Sly, played by Nick Jeong, dead. So they are sent as punishment on an information delivery and retrieval of information mission to Taiwan. But it doesn't take long because until they get into the thick of things, trying to nail gangster Chiang Ying Choi, played by Blackie Ko, and Michael Chow's character takes on an undercover role in Taiwan, and while they try and nail him, and all while they annoy the hell out of their Taiwan superior, which is played by Shan Shun Yung from, among other things, Her Fatal Ways 3, which was set in Taiwan as well. So it makes sense this Taiwan actor was in that one. And on that note, it's notable, this movie, for being shot in Sing Sound, which was not uncommon in 1995, but not common for every movie. But it's actually, because it's set in Hong Kong and Taiwan, and mostly Taiwan, it's therefore correctly a mix of Cantonese and Mandarin, which adds a professional aura to the movie that aids it greatly, but more on that in a little bit. It co-stars a few people, but the main co-star is Gene Wang from Once Upon a Time in China 4 and 5 and Iron Monkey as the female Taiwan cop alongside Shan Shung Yung. What is her role in Iron Monkey? Is it her to place Wong Fei-hung in that one? Or what's the deal there?
So long since I've seen.
I only remember that was probably an ass thing to say, but I remember someone in Iron Monkey playing a male character, although it was a female actress, or vice versa. But apparently she's Miss Orchid in Iron Monkey. Doesn't ring a bell?
Okay. I don't think she was.
Well, Wong Fei-hung is apparently played by Angie Tsang in Iron Monkey, so that's the actress I'm talking about. Wong Fei-hung.
Yeah, Wong Fei-hung is a little kid in that one.
And Gene Wang is Miss Orchid in Iron Monkey. And it's the cousin of Rosamund Kwan's character in Once Upon a Time in China 4 and 5, I think. No, she... According anyway to it, this is all hella confusing, but according to Hong Kong Movie Database, I don't remember this clearly, she is Aunt May in Once Upon a Time in China 4 and Cousin May in Once Upon a Time in China 5, but I'm pretty certain she was a cousin of Rosamund Kwan's character, who doesn't appear in Once Upon a Time in China 4, but anyway, we'll find out more during the Once Upon a Time in China podcast, coming soon to the Podcast on Fire Network, where we for 10 episodes try and figure out shit.
No more episodes.
And that's all the information we have. And as usual, we'll start with brief opinions first and then go into the discussion of it all. So let's start with your brief opinion first, Hong Kong Dave.
I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. It was
took the words out of my mouth.
They decently, you know, executed technically, you know, the actors sort of, you know, they gave their all, but I don't know, it didn't really sort of grab me entirely.
Right on.
I couldn't say, you know, it was like, oh, you know, it wasn't a stinker or anything like that, but I don't know, it just kind
middle
of
the road.
Yeah, just kind of there.
Right. So you have a similar opinion, I gather, don't you?
Yeah, it too was right out of my mouth. I completely agree with David. It was, I haven't got a massive, but I enjoyed it. Like, nothing I hated, nothing I absolutely loved. It was just a solid 90 minutes, and I was definitely entertained throughout, but I can't pinpoint anything that was crap, or can't pinpoint anything that I really loved.
Right on. I think I do like it a little bit more than you guys. I think it's very well executed, very professional, again, the sync sound. And I just enjoy Danny Lee movies. It's one of those movies where it's impossible not to enjoy Danny Lee playing a cop, although it's not him playing a superior this time, like in other movies, like in Dr. Lam and Twist and what have you. It's fun watching the opening scene. Again, this is a Danny Lee production from Magnum. So Danny Lee proves that in the opening scene, he can ride a bike with a large gang of bikers just to come off as cool and iconic. But you know what? He does. I think he's cool. I think Danny Lee is cool. That bike and that bike gang and him being escorted by the cops and all that, it doesn't appear again in the movie. It's on the poster, that bike, but it's not a central character. He can do this, open a movie this way, set to a song, because it's his production company, his production, and because he's the man. And I'm all for that. So it's the only self-indulgent moments by Danny Lee in this production, I think.
Yeah, he's got a lot more interesting voice than I would have assumed. It's a lot more, it's different than I thought it was going to be once I heard his voice start talking. He's more softer spoken than I thought he was he was going to be. I don't know whether you guys.
I don't remember how he was dubbed. If he, I'm, you know, you recognize Chow Yun-Fat's voice even when dubbed, and Stephen Chow's voice, but I can't think of, like, that I've recognized his voice as dubbed when I heard it in Asian Connection or not. I never thought of it that way. I just loved. Finally, they can, we can hear them act, and that helps so much. And I think that even if they went the dubbed route, they would have had Mandarin on the soundtrack. But god damn it, it helps so much to hear them switch Michael Chow and Danny Lee both switch, and they seem comfortable enough in Mandarin. There's not a whole lot of scenes of you know, what did you say? It's the odd scene where they misunderstand each other, but it seems like they're both very very comfortable in it. But then again, I wouldn't know. I just go with the feeling I got from watching the movie.
Yeah, just from seeing him in films before and hearing his voice, this definitely was refreshing to me. It seemed different than I'd heard him before, which is strange. Cause I feel the same with you. You can, like, I recognize certain Dubber's voice and you know, music like Jackie Chan's Dubber's voice and Stephen Chow, but this one was different. It was like it almost didn't seem like it was him. It was very strange, but it definitely gives the film a lot more, as you said, like a professional kind of feel to it. I think it, in some ways they kind of get away with the, you know, semi run of the mill story, because the interaction between him and Michael Chow is Michael Chow is ridiculously likable. He's such a nice guy in this film, and you really kind of sympathise for him as well. Like, I think that's one of the main draws of the film. He's just kind of nowhere for me, Michael Chow. Like, I hadn't really seen him in a lot before. I'd seen him in stuff like Miracles and small roles, but in this one, like, I think it was one of the first lead roles I've seen him in, and he really just blew me away. He's just a really nice guy, a good actor. And
so, whatever notes do you want to leave with for David, or I should really ask, on the topic of Michael, have you any experience watching him in movies as lead or otherwise?
Much like Tom, I've seen him in a few bits, and more used to him in sort of lighter-hearted roles. So it was kind of a bit of a jolt to see him in this. But
He can throw down, though. But I agree, he's suited more for lighter roles, because he's in he's in Her Fatal Ways, the first one, as sort of a prison on the run, and has a few action scenes. But then he's in the second one, and he has a silly beard on, and is perfectly silly, like I expect Michael to be, especially after watching that. The Case of the Cold Fish is fantastic. Again, a Danny Lee production, NSYNC sound, and this. So I regard Michael as a more comedic performer, but I know he can. He's trained in something anyway, because he has action scenes in Her Fatal Ways. Fight action scenes. But yeah, David, what notes otherwise do you want to lead with here?
Just a few bits. Couldn't believe how young Nick Chung looked in the film.
He was actually in Thank You, Sir, from the end of the 80s, another Danny Lee production, sort of a cadet training movie. And talk about him being young in 1988, and it seemed he was Danny Lee's boy for a few movies. They're even in the movie that has a ridiculously long title, and just because I mentioned it, I've set myself up, and I need to. Here we go. He Is My Enemy, Partner, and Father-in-Law.
I've seen that film.
It's a 1999 movie, so still Nick Chung in relatively young, and still trying to be a comedic actor, but now has developed into a more of a serious or dramatic actor, Beast Stalker and what have you.
Yeah, that was kind of a fun movie. It was, you know, nothing, not like a major work, but it was, mm-hmm. you know, a good kind of, you know, little sort of diversion and that. So. Oh. But yeah, I mean, I was, you know, first saw him in this, and I thought, wow, you know, got so used to how he sort of, you know, he looks and, you know, the films he's making now, but to have sort of been thrown back to sort of the mid-90s, it's a real, it's a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
it's not like he's aged and looks old now. No, it's just he's experienced and older and more mature. As I always say, a little bit more heavier presence, not a fatter presence, but a more heavier presence. And obviously, Beast Stalker is a way different beast than the 90s work. So.
Yeah, one of my favorite, actually, it's probably my favorite scene in the whole film is the kind of street level sort of deal that they make. Mm. There's lots of footage kind of in and around the Tsimshian harbour front, and you know, sort of several roads nearby there, which are all like really familiar to me. So seeing them all kind of, you know,
it's a nice sequence of surveillance, them following Nick Chung and Michael Chow's deal that they're gonna make with Ricky Yee. There's good tension and editing in this scene, it's nice to see the various tailing techniques that they use and the code words for the various officers out there.
Mac
and the dog and what have you. So, and I agree, there's a nice street level to it that I found compelling, even though I've never been there. But I do find it compelling when they're out on the streets.
The way it was shot there as well seemed quite kind of like unobtrusive as well. It's just kind of, you know, they weren't making a big kind of thing of how they were shooting it. It was just kind of, you know, almost kind of casual, but not meaning sort of unprofessional, but just kind of quick, you know, kind of quick and kind of instant kind of feel to it.
And I'm willing to bet that actually for once maybe they did have a permit because of Danny Lee's connections in I'm sure he has connections in the police department, and they for once maybe got permission to shoot on the streets here. It's not like one of those scenes where the crowd is gathered around and looking on at the movie being shot, essentially. You can see that in movies, but it seemed like I'm sure they had a permit to do this.
I like the conclusion of that bit where the guys are behind the car and they just disappeared down the manhole.
Yeah.
That's
good.
That's fun, but this movie isn't structured really as an action comedy. It has a few funny scenes, but mostly a straight-faced action thriller, kind of.
Yeah.
But not as heavy as the sound thriller is. You know, it's around about that. Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, it's all right. I thought that's what it was going to be. I mean, I think when the first like 15 minutes is like fairly standard stuff, and then, you know, when the money's gone and then the escape and then Nick Chung's fate has been sealed and, you know, it's gone to shit, and I was kind of hooked. And then for a moment, I genuinely thought for a second it was going to turn into a Cops on Holiday wacky comedy, when he's scared or something. which thankfully didn't. I mean, like, you know, David Lam and Yoon Tak reel it in, and I commend them for it, because we as the viewer want to see the bad guy get taken down and what's from that. And I genuinely thought for a moment they were going to go slow one, it was going to be kind of wacky comedy, I was thinking. But yeah, I think that he got back and forth quite quickly, and it was
it's kind of one of these Danny Lee movies where he dared to venture outside of the box a little bit, because, you know, it's a cop movie, but there's no familiar OCTB team here. Where's Parkman Wong? Nowhere. You know, there's no one out of the team in Dr. Lam and Untold Story and Twist and all of that, and in Organized Crime and Tri-Bureau, that movie. So it's this, the likes of Red Shield that he did with Lung Gayam. It was directed by Parkman Wong, and Blue Lightning, which is Danny Lee trying to tweak his cop persona a little bit, make it something different. And I think this is different because, number one, he's not a superior. He's one of those, I don't have time to play by the books. I need, I want results, and I kind of am breaking the rules. But it seemed like at first I was afraid, though, that he was going to be too youthful for the role, to play it more youthful, riding a bike and look a bit cool. But it never really turned into that. It was just Danny Lee, but a little bit more relaxed and cool, and he can pull that off. You know, it's not a forced character image, this, when he's not in a tie and suit and all of that. I will go back a little bit before we continue to Michael, my final notes on Michael Chow. I love, you know, we think he's funny in this movie, and he has one of his best moments is when he is with Blackie Coe and is forced to snort cocaine as he's in the middle of the undercover deal. And he picks his nose before snorting just to make sure everything is gone there, and just takes a full on line with cocaine afterwards. And I love that. It's subtle comedy. And he's good at that. You know, he has a talent for it. It seems like, I could never be an action star. I tried comedy and it kind of worked for me. I kind of flowed neatly into that. Case of the Cold Fish, fantastic example of that. So it's a great little Michael Chow detail, and his character, you know, he's a very nice character. He's the partner of Lee, and he's the one, you know, unwillingly getting thrown into a situation by his relaxed, seemingly reckless partner. And those, like, simple reactions to him, you know, reacting to these out-of-the-blue plans are well played, you know. In the boardroom at the beginning of the film, there's something Danny Lee says, and Michael in the background just widens his eyes, you know, what? and I like those kind of small things, actually. And if there's a theme here in this movie, I mean, there's not a deep movie, it's that, you know, playing by the books is all well and good, but getting results requires you to tweak your train of thoughts a little bit. Moving on again to you, Tom. What's your next notes in line here? What do you want to mention more about the film?
Yeah, I mean, just touching on what Joe got. I love all the scenes where he's trying to fit in with the criminals. Like, he's trying to kind of keep up the appearance, like, you know, sleeping with the prostitutes. And I love it when he's dancing at the club, and he's just kind of pulling these faces when he's dancing to them, like, yeah, you know, I'm a badass, you know, I'm a criminal, like, I'm not a cop. No, of course not, I'm not a cop. I think he's just, the bit of awesomeness is when he's in the toilet scene, the toilet cubicle scene, where he's about to get shot, and he takes his trousers and his shoes off, and he leaps up towards the cubicle, so when the cubicle gets kicked down and shot, he's there kind of with his legs apart, yeah, in the very top, like in the corner, kind of like just like a raccoon or yeah, something, which is a really cool scene. Yeah, I think he was, you'd think Danny Lee would kind of take centre stage, but I think he was the guy I was looking at and kind of watching for, because I just found him just very, he's just, his persona was just really different. It was kind of like, he was kind of hard-edged, but he was comedic as well, and you kind of felt for him while he was doing all this. While Danny Lee felt like more of a supporting role in the film.
Yeah. It's interesting that Danny, you know, he does allow other people to upstage him. He's never been that actor and director and producer. That, you know, look at me. Although he's on the poster when the movie's being shown. Yeah, in this case, it's a mixed. It's an opportunity for everybody to shine a little bit, and that's a point, actually. Everybody gets a cool moment, at least one cool moment in the movie. That one for Michael. Danny Lee's cool moment, I think, is when he tears up the passport, which prevents him from going back to Hong Kong. You know, I'm staying, I'm riding this, I'm seeing this through, so I'm tearing it up, you know. And even Chan Chung-yung gets his little cool moment in the scene where Danny Lee's being strangled by the big hitman, and Chan shoots the hitman, and that's a track back to the fact that at the shooting range, Chan wasn't a very good shot. Now he's a very good shot, and that is a cool moment, because it's set in smoke and it looks badass doing it and all that. So I really like that David Lam and Yoon Tak give everybody their moments. Even Jean Wang, to an extent, she's not a flower-based kind of performing this role, but she, in the scene where they have stolen the $30 million and it's on the desk of Chan's, and then the superior's coming in, and she, recognizing that, just picks up the bag and says, oh, I'm going to throw away these old files, and no one notices that was money. You know, she thinks ahead. You know, she's good thinking in that regard, you know, competent thinker. And not just a ditzy female cop, which could have been the case also if this movie would have gone the comedy route, which it doesn't. Yeah. But I got to ask you, Dave, then, this movie has an edge to it. There's a violent edge to it. So what did you think of that? Did you think that made sense in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it fits into, you know, to the storyline, and it's really well, you know, executed. But
there's some pretty grim violence in this one. Ricky Yee's character being shot the way he is, and getting his hand pierced by a fork, and on the hot plate as well, little cooking plate. So I mean, they don't spare us in terms of the violence, but it isn't jarring. You know what I mean? What do you think of it as sort of an action movie? if you made any notes about the action scenes in the movie and how it developed in that way. Because there's some gunplay and some chases and some, you know, a fair amount of explosions and all that.
Yeah, it's probably my favourite aspect of the film was the action scenes and their sort of the execution of them. But by that point I was already kind of slightly lost by that point in the film. By that point, because I wasn't really getting the story. So
In that way, the reason I like the film, no, not the reason I like the film more, but I do really dig the whole transition to Taiwan. I think that's a good idea, a fun idea. And, you know, in my opinion, I mean, David Lam is no stranger to making violent movies and conveying violence well, especially in women's prison, which is has a fantastic, almost Ringo Lam-esque violent ending, but shocking as hell, really. And the movie moves very fast. It's got moves well into the action, and the action beats. You know, they're almost as soon as they're in Taiwan, essentially they're engaged in a car chase when they see Ricky He's character in Taiwan that they lost in Hong Kong, and they start causing destruction. And then that's all, you know, cop action movie cliches. But I think it works in this because it's an entertaining movie in my book, and it's fun seeing those differences of the thought processes in Hong Kong versus Taiwan cops, because you have veteran performers dealing with this section of the film. You know, Hong Kong cops, we want to act on instinct. Taiwan cops, we want to act on discipline and by the book, and that's how they clash, and ultimately kind of they meet. Not halfway as such, but they do eventually come to understand each other a whole lot more in terms of how we're gonna bring down violent criminals. You know, there's a fantastic subtitle in the film that sort of summarizes this. You know, the line that Danny Lee says to Shan Chung-yung is, discuss, report, ask for approval for everything, well, don't do anything then. You know, if you're just gonna draw it out, then don't do anything then. Either do or don't. So I like that. That's always a theme that's been in some of these cop action movies. For instance, Police Story, there's a whole speech by Jack Chan about superior sitting behind desks and making decisions, and you're not out there on the streets doing anything. And
yeah, it could come across quite generic, but I think it works. Yeah.
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 And so I think it's a very efficient movie, and the action and the gunplay and all that, it isn't, you know, fantastic and blew me away and thing, but I think it's a very efficient and competent movie.
Yeah.
That works the best, though, when it provides a little bit of character. And
yeah, I think it's a perfect word, Ken. I think it's a perfect word for it's efficient. I'd say it just does what it says on the tin, as opposed to kind of, you know, anything else.
But then again, it does provide a little bit more, in my opinion, because when the movie slows down a bit, if you remember specifically two scenes, for instance, when Danny Lee and Jean Wang are in the hotel room together, it is the scene where he turns on the TV and there's porn on the TV, but it's the subsequent discussion where Danny asks, you know, I can't see many patrolmen on the street here. Well, there's lack of manpower here, and essentially, you know, we are outnumbered by the gangsters here in Taipei. And it's a nice, calm little scene between them. And it's in this scene where I think Danny's compelling warmth as an actor really shows. You know what I mean? Because he's very kind. He's very respectful. He's not trying to be better than her or anything. You know, he's curious about the Taiwan, you know, view the Taiwan side to this adventure. You know, why is this different compared to Hong Kong? What's going on and all that. So I think the downtime between the chases and the case is very enjoyable. And also that scene where Danny Lee, Jin Wang, and is home with Chan's character, where they start bonding and talking about family. For instance, Chan's family being in America, he only sees them, you know, brief times during the year, while Danny Lee says that he chose not to have a family because he doesn't want them to get essentially in the line of fire and deal with the heartbreak that way. And I actually think those moments show a lot of characters delivered by veteran performers. It has that it's veteran performers delivering it. So I don't know what you think, if you thought that added character to the film or not, or you just enjoyed them as scenes.
Yeah, I think they definitely kind of made it stand out a bit more with it. And as you say, again, there's a bit of social commentary kind of thrown in, you know, towards the differences between the police forces, you know, things like that. But yeah, I just think really shot out at me as being kind of particularly impressive. I think, I don't know whether it was because as a whole the film's worked kind of, I don't know, I think flat's a kind of a bad word for it, but I think, as you said, it was more efficient to me as opposed to kind of like a machine, kind of as opposed to more of a creative effort.
We need a kind of a summary, I guess, of this, again, yeah. Efficient, competent movie, and so how do you want to sum it up? It's one of those things, David, where you can sum it up easily, like I did with Wheels on Meals, and in that case it was good fun. I don't know what else to say about it, really. So in terms of Asian Connection, how do you sum it up?
A good, you know, straight up kind of action film. You know, if that's your kind, you know, if that's what really works for you, it's worth a watch. It's just I was just kind of just a little underwhelmed by it as a whole piece. There's bits to enjoy. There's, you know, some great scenes. Some, you know, and you can't accuse them of not putting in the effort. It just didn't work for me personally, is all.
Right on. And I personally, you know, it doesn't have a fresh original bone in its body anywhere, but it's a well-crafted movie with attention to, again, authentic detail in terms of the different settings and the usage of Cantonese and Mandarin and sing sound. And I do find several stretches very exciting and tense, and I there's nothing wrong with gory violence. It moves very well forward. It has badasses as villains. You know, initially you get Blackie Ko, which is a fine badass, but then ultimately it's Jack motherfucking Cow, man. You know, from Full Alert and what have you. You know, playing the Taiwanese gangster in Full Alert as well. You're fantastic actor.
Yeah, I just like to say, good knife for the win.
Yes. The Q branch would be proud. No, so I absolutely, you know, adore Jack Cow as an actor. I'm sure he's more versatile than that. But no, he's a dangerous, dangerous motherfucker. And not just in this movie. But, you know, I do really like it. And there is something automatically entertaining and comforting watching Danny Lee cop movies. But more importantly for me, Danny Lee cop movies that tried a little bit harder. And I think for him anyway, I think he was trying a little bit harder, trying to, you know, play a little bit outside the box, but just come off as, you know, doing what is expected of him. You know, a good level is expected of him based on several other movies, and I think he met that level. And by his side, he has a great co-star in the form of Michael Chow, and also, you know, his Taiwanese male supporting actor, co-star Chan Chung-yung, I think is a fantastic actor as well. So I really dug it, and I thoroughly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's one of those Magnum productions that kind of fell through the gap, again, based on the fact that it's not widely available. We watched a custom version based on the French DVD. So that's the way I sum it up. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of taking what David said and what you said, really, it's an efficient little film, and I suppose it is a nice balancing act in terms of what you just want, Ken, that it's kind of keeping up the Danny Lee persona and what he's portrayed in other films, but also kind of, you know, there's a bit more there to it. It's a bit more kind of nice drama to it, a bit more commentary, social commentary. He lets, you know, more kind of shine in it as well. And it's definitely a recommendation in terms of you can sit there, watch it, and be easily enjoyed, but I wouldn't say there's anything there groundbreaking.
No, not groundbreaking at all. No. Absolutely not. And then I guess you can sum it up as good fun too, in a way.
Yeah,
and quick and efficient. No excessive running time either.
No.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the review. So, what are we gonna watch next week, David?
Right, I was going back and forth between a couple of films, but ultimately I decided on Guan Yu's mainland Chinese film, Cow. Huang Bo.
Yeah, I think Stu reviewed that on the site when he was at the Terracotta Festival a few years ago.
Yeah.
So I was looking forward to that. It seemed like a cool mix that is both goofy and serious, I guess. But then again, I don't know. I just basing that on a trailer and the image that you have of from the poster and all of that of Huang Bo with his cow. So yeah, good on you. Looking forward to that. So we're at the end of the show, and some contact information again. You've been listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, and we have a website which is at podcastonfire.com. You can visit and interact with us on our message forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. Visit the members only archive. Visit the bonus episodes, which is not archived yet, but we've initiated the bonus episode. So look forward to that. At least the next vampire season will be another bonus episode, maybe the second or the third one. On Facebook, we have our regular page, facebook.com/POF network. If you search Podcast on Fire Network, you will also find our discussion group. So join us there and have fun and see updates and what have you. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I am the head writer of SoGoodReviews.com and also do the video reviews of those main reviews on SleazyKVideo.com. And my Twitter account is twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave feedback if you feel that the show deserves some feedback, and rate us on iTunes. And listen to us on the go with the Stitcher app. Either download it to your computer, listen to it on your computer, or download it to your smartphone and stream us. Just search Podcast on Fire Network and add whatever shows you like from the network lineup. And why don't you mention briefly your Facebook page other than your own, David?
Yeah, it's Hong Kong Kid Guide. I've done a few updates today and yesterday. So if people want to search Hong Kong Kid Guide and check those out, that'd be great.
Right on. And Tom is steadily working on review on vcinemashow.com.
Yeah, vcinemashow.com. Just search Tom Kimberly in the search bar.
And we'll link to that review index as always in the show post. And again, mentioned at the top of the show, but I want to remind you again, don't forget to check out the haiku competition. Not the IQ competition, the haiku competition at vcinemashow.com that is part of their second anniversary celebration. So there's huge, huge goodies to be won, including Takeshi Kitano's Outrage on DVD. So that's us for episode 110. So I've been your host, Kenneth Bosom, and with me was Tom KW.
Hello. Goodbye.
Hello and goodbye. Speaking another different, approximating different accents. Maybe
quite
Swedish. Maybe Swedish, I don't know.
That's a special mix for you.
This is Tom Kent Williams saying, hoody-boody, speaking Swedish. And also Hong Kong Day was with us, so say your goodbyes.
Bye, folks.
And see you next time. You've been listening to Crazy FM.